Uniontown to Greenville, Selins Grove to Gettysburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the U.S. economy is roaring, but are women sharing in the good times? National radio and TV personality Rose Tennant joins us for a newsmaker interview. The program helps both man and man's best friend get their lives back on track. Joe Geiger of the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Rob Rosa of New Leash on Life about his personal journey from a life of crime to a life of helping others. And the federal budget deficit has hit record levels and will continue to climb. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Rose Tennant in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Former Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane walked out of a prison this past week after serving time for her conviction on charges that included perjury, obstruction, and leaking secret grand jury information. Kane was the first Democrat and the first woman to be elected state attorney general, but her term in office was rife with controversy, and she resigned following her conviction. Kane also has had her license to practice law revoked. Pittsburgh may not have been selected as the site for Amazon's second national headquarters, but the online retail giant will be building a 1 million square foot distribution center in Allegheny County. Over $30 million will be invested in the project, which is expected to create 800 new jobs. When Governor Tom Wolf vetoed a bill last month that would have provided millions of dollars to the state's 67 counties to help defray the cost of purchasing new fraud-resistant voting machines, he also vetoed a provision that would have added more time for absentee ballots to be returned. Pennsylvania ranks second only to Delaware in the number of absentee ballots rejected for missing the return deadline. That is because of the tight turnaround time for voting absentee. Current rules make absentee voting difficult and especially present a problem for military personnel serving overseas. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. As the 100th anniversary of women gaining the right to vote approaches, it is a good time to take stock of how women are faring in the workplace. Rose Tennant is a well-known radio personality, often seen guest hosting on Fox News. She also is an activist on women's issues and joins us now for a look at whether women are benefiting from the current economic upswing. Rose, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Rose, let's talk for a couple of minutes, first of all, about President Trump's overall economic policies. Then we're going to talk how he has specifically benefited women in this country. In terms of his overall economic policies, we've seen a tremendous upswing in the equity markets, an upswing in employment, a drop in unemployment. What has the president done that has spurred this?
He's helped business by his deregulatory actions, and he promised us he would do that, and that's helped business tremendously. Right now I'm working with Made in America. It's a really cool organization who features these companies, Made in America, and these business people have said that they have been able to prosper and do so much better in the last couple of years than they have in the years prior, and a lot of that has to do with administration's focus on the businessman. They don't care. And you know what's really cool? It doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, because we have both who are very involved in the organization. But they're all benefiting, and they're benefiting as a result of the promises that candidate Trump had made years ago. So it's really exciting to see that. I've been talking to a lot of women in business who are small manufacturers, and I love to see that they are doing really well as a result of his policies. So we've got that. We have the tax cuts and the Jobs Act, and they doubled the child tax credit. You know, there's so many things that have helped us economically. Some people right now are experiencing one of the best economies in their lifetime. So a lot of young people, in fact, speaking of young people, I know that the youth unemployment, I think, is at a, 50-year low right now. So that's something to celebrate. And for those of us who are parents and we see that our children are doing well in this economic environment, that pleases us greatly.
In terms of women in particular, Rose, we are rapidly approaching the 100th anniversary of women receiving the right to vote in this country. That, of course, is a huge landmark that lies directly ahead of us. So have women also benefited from the improved economy under Donald Trump?
The female worker didn't suffer quite as badly during the Great Recession as the men did, but there were a lot of disastrous policies all across, you know, every demographic in the past, and national female unemployment rate went to a peak of 9% in 2010 and then remained really discouragingly high all throughout the last presidency. But what's really neat now is because of this administration's pro-growth economic policies, and again, because of this middle-class tax cut, a lot of things have been turned around, and they've been turned around dramatically, especially for women. So the economy's created nearly 6 million new jobs, and more than 3 million of which have been filled by women. So to suggest that this administration doesn't care for women or the difficulties they may have had in the past in terms of unemployment, we have seen that if half of the 6 million new jobs created went to women, that's huge. And as a woman, I'm very happy to see that. And really, we're at an all-time women's unemployment low. I think the lowest it was before this was in 1953. So we're talking over 60 years ago was the last time we had such great numbers where women's unemployment was concerned.
I believe also, and I have seen some statistics, you might be more familiar with it than I am, where we've also made progress in closing that pay gap between men and women.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing that, as a woman, I'm thrilled about. I really am. And just there's so many things, too. And you consider the paid family leave. I mean, that is huge for us as women who are out there working and bringing home the money. The unemployment rate has been under 4% for 21 straight months.
As we look electorally at the situation, Rose, the president has performed in the past, and of course we only have one election that he's actually run in, but he performed much better among men than he did among women. And I know there's been an effort, particularly here in Pennsylvania. There was a Women for Trump launch that took place in the southeastern part of Pennsylvania where women particularly were not supportive of Donald Trump. How can he overcome the hurdle of getting women who have not been for him in the past to look at the success of his policies this time around?
I think that's a really good question. And I think that if what happened on the eastern part of our state, and I was there, by the way, because I was appointed as an advisory board member for Laura Trump's Women for Trump Coalition, and the number of women were just, it was so exciting to see. The venue was almost, I think it was like 98% full, and women were enthusiastic. And, you know, it's interesting, too, Wilman, because if you go back to the last election, the media and the left vote-shamed women. And you would have thought that would really have deterred women from staying strong for Trump or from the numbers increasing, you know, in terms of number of women who did support him. But I think all that did was really strengthen the resolve of women. And we have been watching to see what's been going on. And a lot of us understand that the government became an industry. And just like every other industry, they had their own set of interests and they wanted to grow, but it wasn't in a way that would benefit all of us. So when we see this president who now in, 3 years has what he's done in terms of turning all of that around, because we don't see him as a politician, we don't see him as an ideologue, we see him as someone who went in there and instead of looking at what kind of political outcome his actions would bring, he looked at the practical outcomes. It's also really important to us what has been done on the world stage. Because as women, we look at what's happening. We look at our borders. We see that the opioid epidemic can be traced back to weak borders and allowing those drugs to come through and kill our children. I've worked with angel moms over the last couple of years, and the stories they tell are devastating. And many of them had lost their children to the drug epidemic. And we just know that border is so important for keeping those things out of our country, because there's a war that's being waged on our children. And when we see what's happening at the border, we are very concerned. So I think that women, as a result of the 2016 election have become stronger in their resolve. They like what they've seen, and they want to continue to see what they've been seeing, and they want security. You know, we all want a prosperous future for our children. We all want to know that those children will have the freedom to pursue their happiness and their goals. And when we start hearing from some of these people in the Democratic Party who are embracing socialism, a term that in the past they would have shied away from, but now they are embracing it, we understand, too, as women, what that means for our children and their future. And we don't like it.
You mentioned vote shaming, where the national media, the left, the Democrat Party tried to shame women for voting for Donald Trump over the first female nominee for president. Rose, every time Republicans talk about, say, for example, ballot security, and we say that we want common sense, simple ballot security measures like a photo ID, we get accused of trying to suppress the vote. Do you see the national media continuing its campaign to try and suppress women to keep them from coming to the polls as 2020 approaches?
You know, they really did in the past, didn't they? Right after those elections, hoping that they would deter us. But I suspect that as we get closer, and depending on who that nominee will be for the Democratic Party, we may see that again. And as I said, we women are prepared for that. We really are. I often think about Katie and Susan B. Anthony. They became very good friends throughout their fight for women's right to vote and their voice to be heard. And, you know, it was 50 years later that I believe it was Katie wrote to Susan B. Anthony, and she said, "Little did we know that we would be handing this over after 50 years to another generation of women to fight this battle."
We have been talking with Rose Tennant. Rose, of course, is a national radio and television personality. I'm sure you've seen her on Fox News many, many times. Rose, tell us where folks can go if they would like to talk with you, learn more about what we've discussed today.
Oh, thanks. It's really easy. It's all Rose Unplugged. So the website is Rose Unplugged. The Twitter is @Rose_Unplugged. And Instagram is Rose Unplugged 1. So it's pretty easy to find me. I can't hide. Facebook, Rose Unplugged.
Pretty hard to hide on national TV. Rose, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Lumen.
A judge said he was a career criminal who would never amount to anything. But Rob Rosa of New Leash on Life proved him wrong. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation talks with Rob about how caring for dogs helped him turn his own life around. Joe?
Thank you, Lumen. Thank you, Rob, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program. This is really part two of an interview that we did previously on a program called New Leash on Life. Today we're going to talk with Rob about what his experience was from a user perspective. When a Common Pleas court judge labeled Rob Rosa a career criminal at age 16, it seems she had plenty of evidence to back her up. He had started experimenting with drugs at age 9. Entered the criminal justice system at 13 and spent much of the next 5 years perfecting his criminal skills in juvenile institutions and practicing them on the outside. 2 years later, reviewing his record of selling drugs, assault, and theft, a second judge pronounced him beyond rehabilitation and sentenced him to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, where he would spend the next 12 years of his young adult life. So, Rob, a pretty bleak start there. What were you thinking at the time? What were you going through? And what started to turn your life around?
Being a person living in addiction, I was pretty much not hopeful. And being stigmatized and labeled didn't help very much to guide me towards any hope for change. I would say around 2000, I volunteered to do a dog program at Great Effort. And this dog program essentially just was focused on training the dogs. It didn't provide any type of services for the people.
So Great Effort's one of our high security prisons here in Pennsylvania.
Yes. Okay. Yes. State Penitentiary. That's where I basically spent my young adult life. And for the first few years that I was incarcerated, I still believed that I needed to live up to those labels that were provided, given to me in terms of career criminal, because I believed those things. These were very influential, powerful people that were saying these things about me. So I believed that this is who I was. when I joined this program, it was volunteer. I was working on the farm, and they brought me a dog that they said that it was going to be euthanized. It was adopted from a shelter and surrendered back 3 times. And, you know, because it destroyed things in the house. It had no training. And I basically identified with that dog. I felt like, you know, this dog was just misunderstood and lacked some guidance and direction in his life.
So he was much like you at the time.
He was. In fact, the very first evening that I spent with him, we had a dog run within the yard that we used to take the dogs out to. And the dog run had about a 4-foot fence. And I had the dog in there. And once the lights went on the big wall, we were not allowed to walk outside of the confined space of that building. But obviously the dog did not know the rules of the prison. So, you know, while I was talking to another one of my peers that was out in the yard with me, the dog jumped over the 4-foot fence and bolted towards the front of the building. And I forgot that I was an inmate in a maximum security prison at the time. And my first thought was, I can't lose this dog on my first day. So I started to chase the dog. Now, it's dark out, and the dog is a black lab mix, and I have this very bright gray prison outfit on, so you can imagine what went on while I'm chasing that dog down the road. We ultimately caught the dog, and the dog must have felt some tension, because when we got into the cell, the dog went into the crate, and I sat down, and I looked at the dog, and I said, "You almost got me killed." And in that moment, he started to creep out of the crate, and he started to walk towards me. And I looked at him, and I said, "I don't know what you're doing." And he walked over to me, and I said, "I'm not going to pet you." And he put his head on my lap, and I turned away. I said, "I'm not going to pet you."
So you basically were lying.
Yeah, because when I looked at him, and he's looking at me with those emerald brown eyes, I could not help but to pet him. In that moment, I told myself, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
This is Joe Geiger in the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Rob Rosa. Rob, today you're the Associate Vice President of Operations for an organization called New Leash on Life USA, or New Leash, a program that helps provide second chances to people experiencing incarceration and rescued shelter dogs. Fill in the blanks a little bit from that first experience with the black lab with you in prison to where you are today and the kinds of things you're doing with yourself.
In 2005, I was up to make parole, and the executive director of that organization that I was volunteering for, she heard that I was up to make parole. And because she recognized the talent that I had and the dedication that I had. I had trained 3 dogs thus far for that program. She offered me a job with that organization, which was something that they never really did. In 2005, when I made parole, I started working with that organization. In the little bit of time that I was with them, I helped them to get accredited by Assistance Dog International. But then I took a job closer to home here in Philadelphia just to be closer to family, with the City Shelter Philadelphia here at Animal Control. And it's where I met a volunteer there who was the founder, who is the founder and CEO of New Leash on Life USA. I'm very lucky and I feel humbled to be a part of this program because I feel it is my life. Every time we start a session and work with these individuals, I see my life replay itself out, and I see hope for these people that we work with.
You really have gone on and become a productive citizen in the community, but more impressive to me, the number of people's lives that you're helping turn around today.
I've been incredibly fortunate, and it's all possible because of the wonderful people that I surround myself with, that I work with, and the support that they provide me, the encouragement, and opportunity, but it's also that the city of Philadelphia provided me the opportunity to come home and be a returning citizen, productive to society.
Rob, let me close this segment with, if you were to come across a 9-year-old in the streets today with who's where you were at the time, what advice would you give them?
I would say that it's incredibly important to focus on education. It's incredibly important to listen to their parents and those positive role models in their life. But I would also say that it's incredibly important to love themselves, respect themselves, and to always set goals for themselves.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program with Rob Rosa. Rob, tremendous story. You're now the Associate Vice President of Operations for New Leash on Life USA. Rob, my guess is a lot of people out there listening to this program is sending you a lot of love today. Thank you for being a guest on our program.
Thank you so much.
Congress has again raised the federal debt ceiling as the annual federal deficit hits record levels. How long can America continue on this path? Ashley Klingensmith is the new state director of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. We welcome her to our program as she discusses the federal deficit on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Suppose you earned $26,000 last year, but you spent $32,000, meaning you borrowed $6,000, which you now have to pay interest on. Most people would say that you're not living within your means. What's more, since you've already racked up $168,000 in debt, you've been at this overspending thing for quite a while. Clearly, this is not sustainable. Anyone would tell you that now is the time to cut back on your reckless spending and borrowing. But unfortunately, this is how the federal government ran its finances last year, by spending $6,000 more than it took in taxes for each household in America. And the problem is only growing worse. Last month, Americans for Prosperity released a report that details just how bad the problem is. Here are the 5 key takeaways from the report, which show that we need to stop overspending. First, our total federal debt today tops $22 trillion. Counting just publicly held debt, the federal government finds itself $15.8 trillion in the red, amounting to nearly 78% of our gross domestic product. The last time our government was in so much debt was at the height of and shortly after the Second World War. There is no reason our government should be borrowing at levels similar to those during the most significant conflict of the 20th century, especially while in a period of such prosperity. Number 2, this is a spending problem, not a revenue problem. Spending will soar above its historical average and far faster than tax revenues. Tax revenues are not declining, but they're growing. Like spending, taxes will grow well above historical averages. But spending grows the most, 39% higher as a share of the economy over the next 30 years. Closing the gap through taxes alone would be crippling to taxpayers and the economy. Even doubling our current tax brackets on top earners from 35% to 70% and 37% to 74% would generate only a little over a quarter of the revenue we need to close the budget gap. Even a value-added tax on all purchases would need to reach 17% by 2030, then double to 34% by 2048. All of this assumes that lawmakers would be responsible enough to reject any new spending programs. The fact remains, we cannot tax ourselves out of the problem, even at rates extremely hazardous to our economy. Congress must rein in spending. Third, this is a problem of mandatory spending programs, namely Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. If tomorrow Congress decided to eliminate the Department of Defense, and with it, the entirety of our military, we would still be running at a huge deficit. The fact is, these programs are so big and grow at such a rate that cutting defense or other discretionary spending entirely would only slightly delay $1 trillion deficits. If we want to stop overspending, we must reform our mandatory spending programs. There is no way around the issue. Lawmakers will have to work together to make difficult choices. Number four, no, we cannot just do nothing. Our mandatory spending programs are growing at an uncontrollable rate, which means that our deficit and debt are too. Refusing to tackle this problem and praying the interest rates do not rise has been the strategy of Congress so far. But that's not a solution. The Congressional Budget Office predicts that if interest rates were to rise just one percentage point, debt would reach nearly 200% of GDP by 2049. If you think today's debt of $22 trillion is too high, just wait, because in that scenario, we would reach $132 trillion. Congress cannot wish this problem away. It must take the lead. Number five, changing course is necessary and urgent. In just 7 years, the Medicare Hospital Trust Fund will go broke, and Social Security's will follow in another 7 years. Lawmakers must change course well in advance of these looming crises. Fortunately, there are a number of policy solutions for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid that will improve health care and retirement, particularly for those most in need, while also making them affordable for today's taxpayers. Americans for Prosperity's new spending report presents a menu of those options. Find that report at americansforprosperity.org and find us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania and on Facebook at facebook.com/fightback. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, lincolnradiojournal.com and lincolninstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WFRJ-FM in Windber, WROV-FM in Ridgeway, along with WRYV-FM in State College, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.